Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, educational HR radio. Of course, the HR Power Hour is podcasts on all major podcast channels. You can also go to HRPowerHour.com, and of course, you can listen to WLOBRadio.com as well. Our guest today is Drew Jones. He's the founding partner of Experient, and he's also the author of the Open Culture Handbook, 5 Questions to Drive Engagement and Innovation. That handbook just came out, Drew, here at the end of 2023 in October. Congratulations.
Thank you very much, David. It's nice to be here. I appreciate it.
No, I appreciate you having you on the show. Hey, you know, culture, engagement, gee, I can't think of anything more important when it comes to organizations and companies. And it does seem that this topic and conversation continues to be something that organizations struggle with, albeit God knows we've been talking about it for many, many years. Why do you think that is? Why does it continue to be such a struggle?
Well, I think at its core, and this is why I wrote the book, honestly, you know, I come at this as an anthropologist originally. My background is in cultural anthropology before I started working for a management consultancy, and my whole career has been in business, either in teaching in business schools or managing or working as a consultant. So I come at it with a different perspective than most that peddle in the culture consulting industry. And really, I believe that, and I try to demonstrate this in the book, that really we manage, in business, we are managing people essentially against our cultural nature. And that despite the focus, really since the early 1980s, people have obsessed over corporate culture, the data are quite damning, really. I talk about that at the beginning of the book. But to make a short answer at this point, I think it there's a fundamental misunderstanding of what culture is at a level of science, you know, as part of human biology. And we try to engineer it. I try to engineer culture in a way that is just untenable. And thus the motivation for writing the book. It's been great, a source of great frustration over many years working with clients where they just rabbit on endlessly about culture. And you can tell the employees aren't buying into it. So for example, a couple of data points to kick off the conversation. For over 60 years, employee engagement has hovered around 30%. 70% of corporate change programs fail. This is data by both Accenture and McKinsey. 80 to 90% of mergers and acquisitions don't achieve their goal, largely because of what's called poor culture fit. And recent research by Gartner suggests that large firms spend about $2,000 per employee per year on culture, whether it's external spend or internal resources. And yet less than 30% of those efforts report a positive ROI. And 70% of the employees in that sample say they don't believe the cultural aspirations of leadership. So the standard approach, which is really what I try to tackle in the book and provide an alternative, is administer a massive culture survey. That's the approach. You know, managers love data. They love numbers. And so you do a survey which maps you onto some kind of schema where you're this kind of culture or that kind of culture or some kind of culture type is typically the modeling. And then the leadership team says, well, what we'd really like to be is this kind of culture type, which is one of the 6 or 8 in that culture set of typologies. And so the culture change project is getting employees to embrace these new values, beliefs, and behaviors so we can achieve this other culture. So the onus of change falls on employees. And many large firms that have been around for a while, they've been through this cycle many times. So employees just kind of roll their eyes and think, well, you know, let's do an over under on how many months the senior team will abandon the whole project. And then the futility just continues. And the next time it rolls around, it's like, oh, we got a new survey we're going to run. So what I try to do is suggest that culture is part of human nature. It's part of our biology. And it's what evolutionary psychologist Joseph Heinrich from Harvard calls the collective brain of human communities. And it's really, from an evolutionary sense, which is the perspective I take, culture really is the human capacity to innovate. When you go back to the beginning, the first hunting spears, the domestication of fire, the domestication of agriculture, maritime revolution, industrial revolution, information, internet, AI, all the stuff. These developments that have really driven human evolution are not the domain of lone geniuses, aha moments. It's the result of culture, that is, people observing, learning, sharing, in the process of adapting to environmental problems and that, this sort of thing. So there's an evolutionary force to culture that gets lost in business when people define it as just values, beliefs, and behaviors, as if they're separate from people. So what I try to do is say, okay, humans develop culture naturally when they're in groups. And how do we create the material conditions where culture can develop organically? And thus the five questions, these are five group tangible things that an organization can do to unlock culture and stop talking about culture in the abstract and commit to these tangible things that impact day-to-day employee experience. So that one of the guiding sort of ideas behind this is the work of both Paul Zak, who's Claremont Graduate University, writes a lot about trust and several big prominent HBR articles, and also Max Dupree, the longtime CEO of Herman Miller, the large furniture company. And their sort of theory was, it's all about trust and trusting people to do the right thing. So Dupree would say we need the three steps to management. One is hire good people. Two, clearly articulate the company strategy so everybody knows why their work is important. And three, get out of the way. So there's a bit of that in my model where, and Zach talks about in his research that in his sample, around 40% of the respondents can say that they don't really know what the company's strategy is. So without clarity on that, you really can't expect things like self-organization and independent work because they don't really know what the end goal is. And so, yeah, this, that's the basic premise is that, you know, how do you unlock culture organically and sort of stop talking about it in this sort of top-down engineering manner?
So let me get back to what I was saying. So if you're going to have something organic, it has to be from within. It has to come from within the person within the organization to make that happen. That's not what most consultants or books are written about. It's really how to change, how to make a change. And is it more about getting an understanding of who the individuals are and what they believe and finding the common ground? Or is it more about the organization finding a common ground with them? Clarify that a little bit.
Well, the onus, what I'm trying to articulate is the onus, in my view, should fall on management to create those conditions. And so it is about change. It's just a different approach to change. So I'll start with a few examples. At Morningstar Tomatoes, not Morningstar, the credit agency, but the largest tomato products processor in the country, it is a 100% self-organizing, self-managing company. No titles, new hires, pick a team that they want to contribute to. But these are tangible things. So when a new hire comes in, W.L. Gore, the material science company that I talk about quite a bit in the book as well, does something very similar. when a new hire comes in, they write their own employment contract. The lawyers do the main one, the one that's binding, but they write a contract called a CLU, a colleague letter of understanding, which is a letter to the team they're joining, but it's written to a specific individual. And it outlines what value this new hire believes he or she can bring to the team for the coming year. And of course, it requires them to study up on what the team's doing and become more expert in that before they even start. But every other month, the recipient of the CLU posts the new hire's progress towards their own stated goals on the intranet so that everybody can see. And so they marry radical transparency and self-organization with radical accountability. And all of these companies that I profiled, not all of them, Microsoft and some of the bigger companies, not so much, really rely on what you know we call peer-to-peer accountability for hiring, firing, performance evaluations. And it holds people's feet to the fire, and it allows that team or those teams to be somewhat autonomous as a group. And that's how it, within that group, a cultural ethos can evolve, is because they're doing everything together, and it unlocks that collective quality to decision-making, accountability, and things like that, as opposed to an annual performance review with the boss. That's all about the individual, and which we all know can be easily gamed, you know, performance reviews if you're buddy-buddy and this sort of thing. So it really ties together the accountability piece with the autonomy piece in a way that is somewhat rare. But the point really of the book is each of the companies that I talk about leads its industry financially. These are not just kumbaya stories. These are companies that have year over year industry leading financial results. So that was really the point, is to say there's this other way that companies do this that is effective, not taught in business school so much, but it is effective. And it's because they unlock this cultural thing that is quite powerful. And really, we can get into it in a little bit, but Microsoft is another, you know, tremendous example as well, which we can talk about in due time. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. I looked at the introduction of your book, and in the introduction, you talk about the 8 myths of management.
Yeah.
I found that fascinating. And what I'd like to do is when we come back from break, I'd like to just talk about that a little bit, because they were very interesting to me. And I can see how people would think of these myths as what they are. And then how that ties into the questions that you have in your book. And certainly want to definitely hear about stories about companies that have had the success and move forward with that and have that happening. So we'll be right back. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on Newstalk WLOB 100.5 FM. And of course, on the HR Power Hour and podcast on all major podcast channels. We'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employee relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
Don't you love that feeling when you've just nailed your look? When someone you barely even know comes up to you and says, "Oh, I love that outfit. Where did you get it?" That's how it feels to use Stitch Fix. They're a personal styling service. Tell them what you love, and they send great clothes for you to try on at home. Stitch Fix is simple. Sign up in just a few minutes. Tell them about the brands you love and the looks that make you feel great. Stitch Fix is convenient. Get everything delivered right to you. Get started today at StitchFix.com. Stitch Fix, personal styling for everybody.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
Let me ask you a question. How do you feel about genetically modified ingredients?
Don't like them.
Artificial flavors and colors?
No thanks.
Clean ingredients.
Now that I like.
When you care about what's in things and what's not, shouldn't your vitamins be clean too? Sundown Vitamins are all clean all the time. Non-GMO, free of gluten and dairy, with colors and flavors from real food. We even have USDA certified Sundown Organics and kids vitamins too. When you're living clean, choose clean with Sundown Vitamins at supermarkets, drugstores, or on Amazon.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clough, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HR Power Hour.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and you're listening to Educational HR Radio. Today, our guest is Drew Jones, founding partner of Experient and also the author of the new book that came out at the end of 2023, The Open Culture Handbook. Drew, we were talking as we left the air about, you know, some of the details of how people have done culture change. And then, of course, your book as to how you would see it as the way to do it. And one of the things I mentioned is in the introduction, you talk about eight myths of management, and they are: humans are inherently selfish and individualistic. Humans are essentially bad, fallen creatures in need of redemption. Humans will alter their values and behaviors for transactional relationship. Leaders are born, not made. Only a few people are genius enough to be creative and innovative. They do make me smile. Humans are rational creatures. That is definitely a myth. Who can be compelled to action through logical arguments. Humans are sedentary creatures and can thrive at office work. And also human culture and community can thrive virtually at any scale. Why did you put those in there? I'm just curious where the myth came from.
I've been sort of silently working in business as an anthropologist for 24 years. And, really never talk about any of this to clients or in the classroom in business school. In fact, I went through all my years teaching in business school and only the department chair or dean knew my actual background. None of my students ever. And so this is sort of a coming out for me. It's saying what it is that I really think. And as an anthropologist, you know, it's sort of this recognition or this talking about publicly that, you know, management as we typically practice it is very much within the framework of a distinct Western set of values and beliefs, starting with that one about individualism. And this really is the starting point. Well, just to back up a bit, the first version of this book was called The Natural Company. And it was eight chapters, a chapter per myth. And it was about 450 pages, and it became basically like a textbook. And so this was really where it all started. And I had hip replacement surgery along the way, and we had a print date for that book, Natural Company, and I was laying there on pain meds, staring at the ceiling, and thought, this is too long, it's too academic, it's too scientific, and it's not readable enough, and it's not straightforward enough. So I called my editor and said, I'm sorry, but I'm pulling the plug on this version, and what do we need to do for me to get a green light to rewrite it? And I did that over the course of recovering and over the next few months. But it kind of wrote itself because it was all in the first version. I just organized it differently. So really the eight myths, I boiled it down to five questions that I think it's the proposition of the book itself is what are, instead of a culture survey of 250 questions, let's boil it right down to five things that matter tangibly to people, to individuals, and can impact what now in our space, you know, in HR, people refer to as employee experience and employee experience design. And so, yeah, these myths are you know, surprising to some. I mean, most Westerners assume, specifically for economists, that we come out of the womb and we're just rational individuals, you know, out to maximize our individual utility and all of that. But actually, evolutionary science underscores, as Joseph Heinrich talks about, that we're actually a collective species. This is exactly what culture is. It's through collective coordinated action that humans have evolved over time. If we were as inherently selfish as Milton Friedman wanted to paint us out to be, our species would have lasted maybe one generation. It's the collective activity that's allowed us to invent new problems and adapt and survive. So that's just sort of the beginning of the book, outlining, you know, a scientific anthropological view on all this. And then I get it out of the way and get into the more case studies and all of that in that make up the rest of the book.
You know, it's interesting. I just thought of it. Some listening today may not know what an anthropologist is. So could you just quickly explain that? Yeah. Because it occurred to me some may be going, driving, or listening, going, what exactly is he talking about?
Yeah, well, anthropology really is the study of human evolution and human culture, both in the archaeological record all the way up to the present. So really, I mean, I would just shortly define it as the science of culture, the science of human culture, but it manifests in people who study the hominid fossils, going back to early evidence of human emergence all the way through archaeology, the folks who dug up the pyramids in Egypt and all of the sort of historical and archaeological stuff. But then today, you know, anthropologists study living contemporary cultures, both in historically really the developing world, Asia, Africa, Latin America. But because the world's so integrated now, you know, anthropologists are working, studying contemporary societies. And to be honest, you know, just to do a plug for the discipline, there are many anthropologists that work at Intel, Microsoft, Amazon, Google, as researchers studying consumer behavior, user experience design. So it's actually a subfield within business as well, but that's mostly on the consumer behavior side of things. But yeah, so anthropology is, you know, it's the science of human culture as I define it.
Perfect. That makes perfect sense. Of course, you're listening to the HR Power Hour, educational HR radio. Today, our guest is Drew Jones, founding partner of Experient and also the author of the new book that came out at the end of 2023, The Open Culture Handbook. You know, again, in the introduction, you talk about these five questions, and I want to get into the book a little bit now, the why, the what, the how, the who, and where. But you talk about this outcome, this medium. Talk a little bit about why you came up with these five questions, and then we'll get a little bit deeper into them.
Yeah, well, you know, starting with the idea that culture, that we're what biologists call, we're, you know, humans are wired for culture. We have this cognitive capability, and then we go to work inside these companies, and it made me think about, as cultural animals, you know, this is very academic in some respects, but what really matters to people in a job? And so the questions really are derived from five things that, for in my view, make up the cultural experience of an employee in a company. And the first being the question of why. So this relates to the myth regarding that humans are inherently rational and this sort of thing. But the fact is, the follow-up to that myth is, we actually are emotional species. And we are motivated by stories and storytelling. This has always been the case. And so the why relates to the question of, you know, what's the purpose of this company? What's the purpose of my job? Does this mean something to me, or is it just purely a transactional thing? And of course, you know, most jobs are largely transactional, but we're seeing with younger generation, there is more overt call for careers with meaning and careers with some kind of sense of purpose and aligning with one's own interests. And that's perfectly, this is what I would consider, you know, this is one of those natural things that we thrive when we align our own values with what we do all day long at work. And so the why is a starting point. And this is why, you know, so for example, at IBM, I talk about it in chapter one, they, in the early 2000s, they were competing against, you know, Acer and Asus and Lenovo and Dell, selling hardware and ever lower prices, sort of race to the bottom on price competition. And they were kind of at an existential crisis. So Sal Palmisano embraced the work of, at the time, Harvard business professor named Adam Brandenburg, where he proposed what he called developing a company's animating idea. And it was this two questions that they posed. They called it a values jam. And they posed these two questions to all 300,000 IBM employees around the world. And it was one, why does the world need this company? And two, what would be different if this company ceased to exist? And the results of that was basically the world doesn't need the company and nothing would change if the company ceased to exist because they'd just go buy some other cheaper server or laptop or a computer somewhere else. So that began the long journey to migrating to software, cloud, and now they make hardly any hardware. It's purely a enterprise software company that now undergrids or under, you know, supports grids of nation states and large organizations. And it's truly important work. You know, if today, if you ask employees the question, you know, if Microsoft ceased to exist, a lot of important global infrastructure would collapse. And it, but as a result of that, answering the why in a certain way, it now has it's become a place where lots of really bright scientists and engineers and PhDs want to work because the work is important. I've got several friends that work at IBM and, you know, they're going through their issue right now with this recent return to office mandate, which is frustrating to a lot of them, but it's an important company. And so they answer the question, and other companies like Patagonia, they have their whole environmental North Star perspective. That's a clear why.
All right. Thank you for giving me the why. The second chapter is about the what. Just a quick overview. What's what about?
The question there that is on a day-to-day basis, what tangibly are you working on? What is the work you do? And so many companies talk about innovation and all these abstract things, but on a day-to-day basis, that's not what anybody does. And so going into the science of it, you know, if we're wired for culture, culture is the process of learning and adapting and innovating, which means that, you know, humans are wired to solve problems through trial and error learning and experimentation. So if what you're working on allows you to do some of that, experimenting, changing how you, things are done, possibly even innovating, you know, for a product or a service, then that switches you on and activates that part of your cultural nature. If you just come in and you're scaling existing products or cutting costs all day long, then you pretty much are flatlining in terms of your engagement. And this is why I say that, you know, innovation is as much an HR issue as it is a business growth issue, because it activates a certain part of the brain and the human experience that is not activated when you're doing what Roger Martin calls algorithmic work, which eventually will be outsourced to AI anyway.
Chapter three is about how, and it says in the book, it says, our team self-organizing and accountable to one another. Accountability is a big, big issue. Accountability mindset is a huge issue. As you talk about it in the book, give us a little hint about how key that is to the process.
Yeah. Well, you know, This gets relates to the, one of the myths about humans are fallen and need to be managed. And this goes back to other books in the 50s and 60s as well. But it comes down to trust. And, you know, again, I can do it through example. I mentioned the example of Morningstar. Another example is, I guess it relates to accountability, is Simco, which is a Brazilian conglomerate, like a miniature GE. And they're entirely self-organizing. No knock on HR as a function, but they eliminated HR entirely by devolving all of that type of decision-making to the team and business unit level. And it ties in with evolutionary science in that in nature, self-organizing systems are the most adaptive because they're closest to the context where they're competing, whether it's a sales team or marketing team or internally. And so the three companies I talk about there are Simco, Favi, which is a French industrial company, and then Morningstar, which I've already talked about. So like, so I could go on with examples. At Simco, each year, employees are asked to say what salary they think they deserve for the coming year. Okay, it sounds like, wow, that's crazy. But everybody knows what everybody makes. That's the radical transparency and the radical autonomy combined. But if somebody asks for too much and they don't perform to that level, then the team has the power to essentially vote that person off the island. And so your contribution has to be proportionate to what you're getting paid. And they let the team determine that over time. And so these are specific things. Anyway, self-organization is one that's the most difficult. There's a whole world of consultants who advocate for this. I think it really, and this relates to the where, which we can get to at the end as well.
That makes a lot of sense to me. Very radical ideas, but clearly are working, right? Clearly.
Again, financially, it absolutely works. And that's the point. And it demonstrates when you allow people this level of decision-making and control over their day-to-day, they simply are more engaged in what they're doing than following orders and being punished when it may slightly go off track.
Well, we're going to talk more about this, and we're going to talk about the next two chapters, chapter 4 and 5, when we come back. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we'll be right back. Educational HR Radio is critical to your organization's success, and our sponsors understand the value this program brings to owners, C-suite professionals, and the HR community. We are honored to thank our sponsors for their support and contributions to this program. We thank the law firms of Verrill, Jackson Lewis, and Sheehan Finney, along with our partners, Paper Trails and Strategic HR. Want to be the next sponsor of the HR Power Hour? Text 603-303-6124 and say HR Power Hour sponsor.
Hi, I'm Susan McVetty.
And I'm Pete McVetty from McVetty's Hearth and Home.
Is there a sale going on at the store right now?
No.
No Hearthstone, Quadrifier, Mendota, Wittes, Blaze King, or Morso sale?
No.
No Yodel, Vermont Castings, or Regency? Oh, there's always a Regency sale.
No.
You're telling me that out of the gazillions of wood, gas, and pellet stoves that we carry, there's not a single sale going on?
Nope.
Oh, what about patio furniture, awnings, grills, smokers, and aluminum docks?
No, just because there isn't a big sale going on doesn't mean that we're not having great deals and still doing free estimates for anyone needing a heating appliance.
Oh, well, good. Just let me know when we're having another sale.
Okay, there's always a bargain to be had if you are looking for one. And we don't need a new heating appliance.
Well, maybe my sister needs one, or my friend, or your sister.
Stop by McVetty's Hearth and Home at 893 Route 1 in Yarmouth, or check out our website at stovesofmaine.com for the latest information, including our sales.
Really? I have to check out the website? Really? And I can't believe Regency isn't having a sale.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than 7 generations of legal expertise.
More than 130 attorneys across 7 offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
With Zillow, you're not just looking for a house. You're looking for the bathroom where you'll give your kids shampoo mohawks. The bonus room you'll turn into a gym and work out in every single day, starting tomorrow. You're looking for hardwood floors worthy of your signature dance move, the glitchy robot.
You're not just looking for a house. You're looking for a place for your life to happen. And whether buying or renting, Zillow makes it easy with simple smart search features, photos, video walkthroughs, and more. Zillow, find your way home.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts, stoprex.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clough, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HR Power.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and of course, you're listening to Educational HR Radio. HR Power Hour is broadcast on WLOB Radio, WLOBRadio.com, and of course, you can go to HRPowerHour.com or every major podcast channel. We are talking with Drew Jones, and he is the founding partner of Experient and the author of the Open Culture Handbook. And we're talking about chapters 4 next, and that is the who. And you know what's interesting about the who is, you mentioned here, does leadership trust their people and foster a growth mindset? The answer most of the time when I talk to leaders is mostly we trust them, kind of, mostly. Kinda. So how does that play a role here?
Well, yeah, I mean, this is really critical. Just by saying that, you know, leaders aren't born, they're made, which runs counter to a lot of folks who believe that, you know, you're born a leader. Just because I disagree with that, it doesn't mean I think that leadership isn't important. I think leadership is critically important. But leaders are born of certain moments. And it's what I call cultural leadership. Certain people, mix of personality, the timing, the industry, the moment, they're just the right person. And you may not have seen that in the person when they were a kid. You know, some people feel like, you know, you just, yeah, you know, they always raise their hand and they led the volleyball team or whatever. But Satya Nadella is a perfect example of this at Microsoft. He is what I consider, and I write about in other articles, an anthropological leader in that he has deep empathy. And this is one of the aspects about anthropological research is empathy. But you can contrast him with Steve Ballmer. Nadella has a child who is disabled and really formed who he was as a parent of a disabled child. And so when he got the nod to be CEO at Microsoft, Ballmer was an MBA guy running a tech company. Nadella's an engineer first, a scientist first, and then running a business. And he was really influenced by a book by Carol Dweck called Mindset, where she outlines the difference between a growth mindset and a fixed mindset. And his motto is experiment and take risks, learn, after action reviews, make sure people know about how it went, whether it succeeded or not, and try it again, because we're not going to punish you. And so under Ballmer, it was all about sales. It was product. Businesses were pitted against each other. The share price collapsed 36% over Ballmer's tenure. In comes Nadella, and Nadella, in his 2015 speech at TechCrunch, signaled a new Microsoft. He, you know, came out and was like, you know, open source software is not bad. We want to explore that. He never mentioned Windows once. And he was basically signaling a new era at Microsoft, which was going to be open to open source solutions and collaborating with what had been competitors before. Green lighting innovation internally and allowing people to try new things, develop new products, and activate that inner innovator that I talk about, with the promise that you won't get punished if you fail, as long as we document it and learn from it. And it created a spiral where it became clear to engineers, largely from Silicon Valley, that this was the old Microsoft. This is where things were happening. So in addition to now becoming, I think, between Microsoft and Apple, this most valuable company in the world by market cap, also a draw for talent. And it's because of this new way of motivating people to take risks, innovate. They bought, was it GitHub, which is an open source software shop. These are powerful, very different signals in the market from the earlier Microsoft. And this is why I say that he was the perfect person for the job, because he was, he came out of the cloud business, enterprise cloud. So he was a technologist first, and he has the credibility amongst other engineers. And then he gives him a long leash to innovate. And now this, what I call a cultural turnaround, really was behind this financial turnaround. And so who is making the key decisions is extremely important.
No, it makes perfect sense and a great example. Last is chapter 5, and I know the question is where. And you talk about, do company work spaces and policies support employee flexibility and choice? That seems so relevant today with the question of, hybrid work, flexible time, all that. So tell me your perspective of how that works today and why that's such a key component of the book.
Yeah. Well, one, I think that it's a balancing act. It's threading the needle for an organization, because on the one hand, I think when you impose mandates, you create resentment and a bit of a defensiveness. And so allowing employee choice in when and where they work, I think, is critical. But I also believe, and this is the purpose of the chapter, is that place matters. And that going back to sort of evolutionary science, humans develop a sense of place. We all do, in terms of where we live, where we most identify. So for some people, it's the mountains. Some people, it's the beach, whatever it is. And that basic human element does manifest itself in at work as well. And so I think that one of the strongest ways to build culture or organically is to have a place where people want to be, and they show up somewhat regularly. That might regularly might be once a week. It might be once a month, but over the course of time, they do have that shared experience. And so the workplace really, really matters, and what design, what spaces are there for people to work in. You know, we went from cubicles to open plan offices, and we've had all these sort of failed experiments in how to organize people at work. But what we're starting to see now is the emergence of really a, it's not that new, it really originated in the 90s, but it's a concept known as activity-based working, where no employees have a fixed office or desk, but they come in when they need to. And the building is designed around a tremendous variety to accommodate introverts, extroverts, individual work, teamwork, cafe environment, all these different, what I'll call is, you know, the corporate village. You create a place that is comfortable to be and fulfills the need that you have for certain activities, with the idea that some of those activities will be best done at home. And so what we do at Experian is companies that adopt activity-based working tend to accomplish two things simultaneously, which to me really meets the moment of the post-pandemic. One is when you allow choice, the number of people coming in on a daily basis goes down considerably, and you don't need a desk per person or office per person. So you can reduce the footprint somewhat dramatically, because right now, so going back pre-pandemic, the average office utilization rate, that is people in desks, was around 40 to 50%. Now it's around 10 to 20. So if people and salaries and benefits are the largest costs for many companies, the second pretty consistently is real estate. So we're sitting on just literally over a billion square feet of real estate that nationally that probably isn't needed. So the proposition is, okay, well, how do you create a place that people do want to be when it works for them so they can gather and have this shared sense of place, but not require them to be there? Well, you can reduce your footprint by 30 or 40% right off the bat when the next lease cycle comes up. So that's an enormous cost saving. And both by extending choice, but then also designing the space in a way where there's ample areas for all the activities, whether it's solo work or social or collect or collaboration work, employee engagement goes up considerably, as does employee productivity, because people find the places and times where they're most productive doing what they have to do. So you can achieve, you know, productivity and engagement increases and reduction in real estate costs. And that's really what the activity-based working is all about.
No, that's great. And today, of course, you know, we do have this push-pull between leaders and employees about what this means. And there is some generational component of it, but it's not all generational. It is very interesting, if you look at the stats, which I know you do as well, that it's not all older that want to go back to work. There are some younger that want to go back to work. And there is this component of having part of a family, and sometimes truly the family at work is better than the family at home. And that's a component of a piece of the component in terms of that.
And the learning, I mean, you know, core to my perspective on culture is that culture really is about learning and adapting and innovating and that sort of thing. So at the core is learning. So for younger staff, learning and mentoring, I mean, this is really the high value of being in the office around older folks who have more experience. And it doesn't need to be formal, like a mentoring program. People kind of resist that. But just everyday interaction, observation, and learning from others is critical.
Great conversation and the critical piece, I'm sure, of this book. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
You don't know where to go.
Take it to Moody's.
You want to get on with your life, get on with the show.
Take it to Moody's.
Good people you can trust,
and it won't be a fuss. Take it to Moody's. Collision Centers.
M-O-O-D-Y. Your kid was talking on the cell phone, drove right through your own home, sitting in the parking lot, maybe you get hit a lot, driving through the green light, suddenly your side swipe, put it in reverse, but it turned out that it was first.
Take it to Moody's. Take it to Moody's. Collision Centers.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clef, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HR Power Hour.
To protect her home and family in a disaster, Karen was willing to wade through water, mud, and insurance paperwork.
Yeah, I can do this.
You go, Karen! By simply understanding and updating what her insurance covers and doesn't cover now, she'll be better prepared no matter when disaster strikes. Learn other simple ways to protect your home and family before a natural disaster at ready.gov. That's ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
And we're back. You're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo. You're listening to Educational HR Radio, and our guest today has been Drew Jones. We're talking about his book, The Open Culture Handbook, which is available where, Drew?
Amazon.com, as well as at Amplify Publishing, the publisher.
Excellent. And if they want to reach you at your website, what is the website that they would reach you at?
Experient.work.
Could you spell that?
E-X-P-E-R-I-E-N-T, experient.work, or at my personal site where you can also get the book, drewjones.co.
drewjones.co. Great. Correct. Well, we've asked the question about the book. We've heard a lot about it. The last big question is, why should somebody buy it? What would they get? What would it do for them?
It comes down to this. It's an altogether different perspective on culture. There have been a gazillion books published on culture, and I would say that none of them are based in proper science, and therefore we have these dismal numbers about cultural change. And so just for a completely fresh perspective on culture that correlates with strong financial performance, and would love to have you take a look and get in touch and we can talk about it.
Well, if you want more money and better culture, this is the book to buy. Again, the book is The Open Culture Handbook. Drew, it was great having you on as a guest today.
So great to be here, David. I really appreciate your time.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk, WLOB 100.5 FM.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk, WLOB 100.5 FM, or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.